listening to 91.9 FM KPTZ, Pleasures and Treasures with Treasures and Pleasures, the interchangeably monikered show. And today, what a treasure, what a pleasure I tripped upon through my wife, Nyla, who introduced me to Laura Melvin, who's just written a book, Footprints on My Soul, a journal of a circuit court judge. And that's the last I'm going to read exactly, because I just have to tell you, folks, I kind of listen to Nyla when she makes suggestions, but in this case, I totally fell in love by myself with the soul of the woman before me. Welcome, Laura Melvin.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here.
I'm going to just cut right to the chase. The book is Laura's, there's excerpts from her journal when she was on the bench as a judge in Florida. She walked off the bench at age 53 because the pain of seeing the children that had been abused and mistreated by the adults in this culture just tore at her soul. She kept a journal when she was on the bench, and then she started writing when she was on the road. She got rid of everything, got into an RV, and that's how she came to Port Townsend, listeners. She is here with us briefly. I want you to hear, the way she writes is absolute, with clarity and poetry at the same time. And the quote that is lifted for the title, that she lifted from herself for her own title, is, "All that is left behind as I drive north with the fifth wheel in tow, but I still carry tiny footprints on my soul, left there by children I've met through those roles. Big lessons imprinted by little people." And that sort of encapsulates how this entire book works. Have you ever written poetry, Laura?
I do. I enjoy it, and they're gifts. When I can write a poem, it's a gift to me.
And are you aware that your narrative is poetic?
On a good day.
Well, also, you're very involved with nature, and it's kind of nature speaks to you, and then through you, nature speaks to us in this book.
Thank you. I would not survive very long in the middle of a cement world.
Well, you know, your antidote to pain in life is nature. Mine is sleep. Yours is more poetic, I'll tell you that. And you described it. You say, "At night I wrote the stories of people I had met at work, but I also wrote to plumb the depths of many a dark hole in my psyche. During the day, I continued to act and look professional, appropriate, and judicious." This reminds me of the therapeutic value of writing. At Centrum next week, I'll be doing a workshop called Journal Writing as Self-Therapy. Do you feel that when you write your thoughts, A, you learn more about yourself, and B, you work things out more just by putting them on paper?
Absolutely. I was a court reporter for a number of years, and basically I think that I take dictation from my soul, that I write out, just as you said, I write out what I need to.
Well, did you just hear yourself? You talk poetically. "I take dictation from my soul." I mean, I swear to God, this is, you just put a footprint on my soul. That was lovely. That was so lovely. Is there a particular passage you wish to read the listener? That's okay. I have a million.
Go for it.
Well, let's go backwards a little bit. Okay. First of all, this book is available, listeners, at Imprint Books Writers Workshop. Anna Quinn has taken some to sell for Laura. It's also available other ways. Laura, will you tell the listener how else they can get this book? Because every person that ever dealt with a child needs to read this book.
Thank you. Autograph copies are available through my website, which is lauramelvin.net. They're also available on Amazon, on Kindle, and your local bookstore. But as she said, they're already there.
And the other wonderful thing is that Laura begins each chapter with a quote. Everybody from Mahatma Gandhi to Louis Pasteur. And the quotes are, of course, quotable. And I'll just give you the Louis Pasteur one. "When I approach a child, he inspires me in two sentiments: tenderness for what he is and respect for what he may become." And how heartbreaking to see kids that won't have an opportunity to become what they might otherwise become.
And yet how wonderful to watch kids who have been severely traumatized go forward and become what they could become because someone listened to them, someone believed them, and someone supported them. And I think that is my goal, my mantra here is how important it is to listen, believe, and support a kid, because the amount of trauma in and of itself isn't the part that determines the health of the child. It's whether or not there was someone there for them.
And you certainly were there as much as you could be. And the beauty of this book is the possibilities when you can get a kid to open up and speak their truth, however frightened they are. There are many case examples in here of you getting rid of everybody and being alone with the child, doing whatever it takes. You customize it to each child to help them feel safe speaking their truths.
Well, I'm smiling because have you ever tried to get a child to fit in a box? It doesn't work.
Well, a wonderful example. I'll just take one little one because, reader, you're going to have to get the rest for yourselves. And I know you will because this town is going to just adore this book. And I don't think I've spoken this way in all my shows. I mean, I love all my treasures and pleasures. But this one, I guess because I've worked so much with children. And I understand secondary trauma, which is the adults that are close to the kids get traumatized by the trauma the kids are presenting. I'll never forget a rape case that I had as a therapist. I did fine, you know, helping the child, getting the parents to come together to help the child. I got into my car, I drove home at the end of the day, and I couldn't get out of my car. And I know you've had those kind of moments, but you've shared them poetically, and there's a lot to learn. There's also a lot to learn about the law in your book. Because you were in a small rural area, you saw a range of cases. You saw crime, divorce, all sorts of things. And talk about what that is like to deal with the complexity of shifting gears.
The first 3 years that I was on the bench, I was the only circuit judge in that immediate area. So I had to do it all. And wearing that along with figuring out how to be a judge was hard. Okay, it was hard. And there are parts of Florida where a judge might hear only one assignment for years and years and years. Northwest Florida, as you can tell from my accent, doesn't sound or look like Miami, Orlando. They refer to the area I'm from as L.A., Lower Alabama. And so changing gears was both difficult and a necessary reprieve. It made it easier in some ways not to have to do the same thing all day, every day. I moved from there to a much larger area, and that area you do rotate through the different segments, some of all of it.
It was like I forgot the expression in woodworking when you open up the wood and see the insides, and you really see the beauty, you see the lines, you see the destruction as well. And I feel like you kind of opened up your judicial head and let us all in so we could see what the actual judicial process was for you. And I want to read another quote, which I think encapsulates a lot of what you're about. And it's what I think we all strive for in our personal relationships and our professional ones. Our life is love and peace and tenderness and bearing one with another and forgiving one another and not laying accusations one against another, but praying one for another and helping one another up with a tender hand.
And that's a quote from Isaac Pennington, who is Quaker from the, I believe, 1600s. And he sets a very high mark, but one that's worth the effort.
And then we're going to go back to the trauma. And this is the final quote I'm going to quote so we can continue having a conversation. I sat in an office that was quiet, but in a soul that was screaming. It was though I found myself by the side of the road, stunned and confused, watching Christmas lights blink and reflect off a horrific wreck. It just encapsulates it all. So let's get on to some very positive stuff. Well, this is positive in that you're sharing and people. First of all, you know the Ralph Waldo Emerson quote, in every work of genius, we see our rejected thoughts. They come back to us with a certain alienated majesty. So another way of saying the aha thing, anybody that works with kids has felt a lot of the stuff you're saying by alienated majesty. It's not theirs. It's yours reflecting your own and ours, actually. To happier things, you had a grandchild born while you were on the road. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your trip back because he had the hiccups.
I think it takes a grandmother to understand how that could happen. But I had met him, but he was only about 6-8 weeks old. When I was talking with my son on the phone, and I heard the funny sound in the background. And I asked what it was, and he said, oh, the baby has the hiccups. And the ground shifted. I mean, it was time for me to go back because he had the hiccups. Now, oh, by the way, I was 2,000 miles away, and it was going to take a while. But I did. I went back then, not on the schedule that I'd put in my head.
You're listening to 91.9 FM, KPTZ, Treasures and Pleasures, Pleasures and Treasures, the interchangeably monikered show. I have with me today Laura Melvin, author of Footprints on My Soul, a journal of a circuit court judge. This is Marcia Pearlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer. Just before this station identification, Laura was telling us how she raced back to her grandson who had hiccups. But really, the larger message I got there, and that's another piece of this journey, all of us who have journeyed happens in a certain way, is you get signals, you get messages, you know when one course you're going on that your head told you was a good idea may not be such a good idea, a better one has come along and you follow that. And that's probably a freedom you never had all your professional life, of course.
One of the things that was so difficult for me on the bench was that if I wanted to take off a week, okay, I needed to make those plans 6 or 8 months in advance. And how was I supposed to know 6 or 8 months out when I was going to be on the edge and have to bolt? So, yes.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of the disguised hippie in you. I like that. And I did say I'm doing no more quotes, but I do have to say, not only does Laura open her soul to us, listener, she gives us quotes that are things I would love to live by. Here's an example of what you do with fear. The trick is to put a saddle on your fear and ride it. Don't let it ride you. Let fear be your friend. Let it keep you safe. I don't say it as poetically to my clients. I say the only thing to do with fear is move through it and then have the grace to appreciate your ability to have done that. So what gave you the strength and the courage to give up power, a lucrative career, a large house with lots of stuff that your niece got? I mean, of course it was the pain, but it still took some courage. And where'd you get that courage?
I say that the universe has a grand sense of humor, and I have a prayer that I do not recommend to anyone, but I continue to use it, which is, Creator, please don't be subtle. And so that's what happens. So it isn't so much that I had the courage to go, is that I didn't have the strength to stay. There is a quote in the book to the effect that there comes a time when the pain of staying closed is greater than the pain of opening.
Yeah.
And I had to go, and it didn't really matter, and I knew it. Part of the knowledge came from the experiences that I had skydiving, and talk about walking through your fear, but learning that all my dragons come out and scream up until the point I'm completely committed and it's irrevocable. And after that, it really does get better. And I knew I had to go. I had to back off the ledge.
This is a very multi-layered book. So we follow certain paths of yours, your family path and your relationship to your father, your professional path, and your spiritual path. You started off as a Baptist and landed up as a Quaker with a number of things in between. Let's talk about the whole idea of journeying, not knowing where you're going, but enjoying what you discover.
It continues. I'm leaving here, heading back towards Florida. I bought a house 3 years ago because my heart really said I needed to come off the road and be there for my granddaughter. It may be that time is changing because she's getting older. I still don't know when I get it right. I still bust my knuckles. I can get lost in a goldfish bowl, so I make lots of wrong turns. I'm more afraid of not living than I am afraid of dying. It's a good thing that there's nobody with me because I drive them crazy because it is such a varied path for me. But the Quakers specifically give me some guidance and set some really high marks without putting any bookends or parameters or shoulds or oughtas like some of the other paths that I had taken.
You follow paths till you understand what they are for you, and then you keep what works, you get rid of the rest, and you move on. I think that's the metaphor I've picked up in your journey. So do you feel you're going to move into another profession or start collecting seashells? Or
I have been doing family mediation for a while. I would like to lay that down now. I really would. I'm pretty good at it, and it's some negative energy. I love the camera. I love photography. I enjoy writing and specifically poems. I don't want another profession. Thank you very much. I would like to travel. I ride my motorcycle a lot, and those are the things that bring me joy. And encountering the kindness of strangers, and I do every day. And that's what fills me. And I would much rather live small and not need a profession to pay rent and be able to do that.
So you just find things on the way. But I still have a suggestion that's not a full profession.
Okay.
I just think you need to take, I call them virgin lawyers, the ones beginning on their path to go into judicial practice of any kind. Just go around the country and give workshops and courses on your book. And because they need to get the spirit of being in the legal system. Yes, there are injustices, but how to do their part to really find justice, because that's what you really sought. And that people are too busy when they train for a profession, getting the nuts and bolts and fantasizing large checks and all of that kind of stuff. And they don't have the spirit of service. You could inculcate them with that, and you could just do, you know, a week every 2 months somewhere.
And travel.
There you go.
I taught a course at the Advanced Judicial College in Orlando in June, and it was called Law, Justice, and Morality. And that was fascinating. A day and a half course.
See, two great minds on the same path. You're already doing what you need to do more of. Now, it's not my beeswax, and I'm just interviewing you, but I just want to see the world have your integrity and your depth of thought and your soul and your sense of justice. I want you to share it with the world.
I would love to be able to do that.
So is there anything I haven't asked you that it would be important for our listener to know about your path, your thinking, your feeling, about your connection to Port Townsend? What do you think of our little burg?
I love it. I came here too tired. I had been pushing too hard, jumped over too many buildings in a single bound, and knew I needed to sit down. And I picked Port Townsend because I had been here years ago. And I've been here. This is a long-term commitment for me. I've been here 2.5 weeks.
Whoa.
I know.
Be careful.
I love it.
We may stop you at the gate. You may not get out of here.
No. It's a great place, and it's one that I hope to, that I really hope to come back to. In terms of something that I would want to leave with the listeners, it would be that children are our blessing and our responsibility. They're both resilient and vulnerable and not listening, not believing, not supporting a child, that may be the greatest wrong of all.
The not believing is huge, huge. And boy, that really encapsulates your belief system. And also, listener, she just made a quick reference to, oh, being on our motorcycle, skydiving. Well, this woman takes long-distance motorcycle rides. When she says getting on our motorcycle, it's not from Don's Pharmacy to Water Street. She gets on her motorcycle. She's a skydiver, and she, when she says go over large buildings, she does. It's been a real pleasure, Laura Melvin, to have read your book, to see you face to face. Thank you so much for being with us. You are indeed a treasure and pleasure, a pleasure and treasure. This is the Interchangeably Monikered Show. Laura Melvin, Footprints on My Soul. You can get her book at Anna Quinn's Imprint Books Writer's Workshop. This is Marcia Pearlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer. I'd like to thank, of course, Laura first, then Mike Schlexer, our fabulous editor, engineer, Nora Petrich, our station manager, Larry Stein, our program director. Go gently. If you can't go gently, go as gently as you can. Until next time.